You're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM broadcasting from Burnaby.
Guerrilla Radio, recorded March 20th, 2024. Well, as dates of infamy go, March 20th is right up there. It was on this very day, 21 years ago, George W. Bush marched American troops into Iraq, preceding the heinous shock and awe bombing of Baghdad. Now, even the lying media majors whose mendacity then allowed the catastrophe inflicted by Bush's coalition of the willing happen concede the attack and all that followed was based on lies. A pack of lies, as George Galloway would thunder at U.S. senators 2 years later. So why did Bush do it, if not to neutralize Saddam Hussein's non-existent weapons of mass destruction? Perhaps the intense lobbying by Israel for the war and ascendancy of the neocon claque within the Bush White House can explain it. Two things are certain, however. Those manufacturing the lies in Washington profited their infamy handsomely, and today are free to enjoy the fruits of their complicity in the murder of unknown numbers of Iraqis, and that impunity not only made the ongoing Gaza genocide possible, but guarantees a future of unending atrocity. Ken Stone is an activist and author working for peace with the Syria Support Movement International and Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War. His book, Defiant Syria, Dispatches from the Second International Tour of Peace to Syria, is a compilation of his dispatches from his 2016 visit. Ken and the Hamilton Coalition have been in the fore of Canadian resistance to militarism for years, and that activity has increased since October of last year. Ken Stone and Gaza foremost in the first half. And none were surprised Vladimir Putin won an overwhelming mandate to continue in the office of the president in Russia over the weekend. But to hear the Anglo-American media reports, that entirely predictable event is merely a claim made by the Kremlin. So just how are we in the West to go on in the world with our faculties clouded with such nonsense? And every day it gets worse with ever more draconian message management measures being devised to reach right into social media. John Helmer is an antidote to the poisoned press on Russia especially. John's a journalist and author who spent decades living in and reporting from there and persists as the principal behind the web news site Dances with Bears. John has too been a professor of political science, sociology, and journalism, and has served as advisor to government at the highest levels. Among his many book titles are Skripal in Prison, The Man Who Knows Too Much About Russia, The Lie That Shot Down MH17, Sovcom Plot, How Pirates Tried to Capture the Treasure of the Russian Seas and Were Caught Out, and his lately released autobiography, Dunce Upon a Time, A Life of Mistakes. His latest article at Dances with Bears, when it comes to fighting Russian diamonds, the Jewish diamond trade and De Beers are a busted flush, looks at the cascading negative effects for Israel of its barbarous Gaza campaign. John Helmer in the second half. But first, Ken Stone and Fighting for Peace in the Middle East from Canada. Well, welcome back to the program, Ken.
Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's always my pleasure to have you. Canada's House of Parliament voted yesterday on a motion proposed by minority government partner NDP. It was advertised, Ken, as a call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza, prohibition of weapons sales to Israel from Canada, and recognition of Palestinian statehood. That's how it started. How did it end up?
Well, I think that the resolution got watered down considerably in order to appeal to the Liberal MPs to vote for it. I'm glad that the motion was debated in the House, and I think the main takeaway of the non-binding resolution is that people in the streets are responsible for the fact that Parliament debated the resolution. People have been demonstrating since October 7th, and they've been phoning their MPs, they've been blocking MPs' offices, they've been occupying buildings, they prevented the Prime Minister from meeting the Prime Minister of Italy, and so on. And that is what caused this resolution to be debated in Parliament. I can't recall a time before when Palestine took up the entire day of, or most of the day of Parliament before. And I congratulate the NDP for bringing it forward. I'm sorry that they saw fit to water it down to the point where it may not have been meaningful. But in any case, the people are being heard, and I think that the people in the street should continue to do what they're doing, because in any case, it's a non-binding resolution. And their pressure has forced Canada, has forced the Prime Minister to stop any or temporarily suspend any future arms sales to Israel. If the pressure from the people has forced the Trudeau government to reinstate funding for UNRWA. So, I think all the agitation, the demonstrations, the activity, the calling of MPs should continue, because there's a genocide going on in Gaza, and it looks like it's coming down to the wire, so we should not let up at all.
Well, now, for those that don't understand, including me, what does the non-binding resolution actually mean? The Liberals had already announced, the government had already announced, that they were going to resume funding to UNRWA, so that was something that was already in the bag as far as the Liberals can say, and they've got a hailstorm of protests from the pro-Israel lobby, even on something as anodyne as that. And as far as I know, the money hasn't begun flowing or anything like that. And even if it does, what UNRWA can even do, given the situation in Gaza right now, is up for debate. But the fact that it's a non-binding, what does that mean? Does that, as far as, say, the weapons transfers goes, I mean, can the government still just say, well, yeah, but it's non-binding, so we're just going to do it anyway, but we're going to do it on the quiet?
Non-binding, for your listeners' benefit, means that occasionally in Parliament, I can't remember how often, there's an opposition days, and the opposition parties can put forward resolutions, and the Parliament, all the parliamentarians are supposed to be there to debate them. But they don't have the effect of being binding, because they are not government resolutions. They are resolutions from the opposition. The government could adopt the resolution if it wanted to, but it's not obliged to do so. So it's more or less a statement of opinion by the parliament as a whole. And it's true, what you said, that the Trudeau government had already paused any future sales or suspended future sales to Israel, and that's good. And the government had announced that it was restoring funding to UNRWA, but as it turns out, the payments only go every 2 or 3 months, and actually Canada didn't even miss a payment. But so UNRWA is going to continue to be funded. UNRWA, the United Nations Relief and Works Agency for the Palestinian People, was set up 75 years ago by the UN to take care of all the needs of the Palestinian refugees, including health, education, housing, so on. They are the only organization. They have 33,000 employees across the Middle East looking after Palestinian refugees. And they are the only organization that has a prayer of being able to look after the needs of the Palestinian people. All this nonsense about a floating pier and airdrops and all that is just pure PR, photo ops, and more. Actually, the floating pier is a way for the U.S. to insert its troops into Gaza and become an occupation force. And it's also a possible way for Israel to push the Palestinians of Gaza onto ships and send them away. So this floating pier business is an insidious idea. So I'm hoping that saner heads prevail, and the trucks, the UNRWA trucks, there's hundreds of them sitting at the Rafah crossing, and they're waiting to get in. But and there's more at the Kerem Sholem crossing, and they're waiting to get in. What has to happen is those trucks have to get in, and the Hamas police force in Gaza has to see, and with UNRWA's help, that the food gets distributed equitably. That's what needs to be done.
Well, yeah, and that leads into an Israeli talking point that essentially paints starving Gazans as animals that are so unruly that they mob the trucks to their own peril, that even so much as when Israeli forces in the first of the series of flour massacres, this is Israeli military firing on people, starving people going for trying to get aid. They blamed it, the deaths on the people themselves, on the Gazans, for being so unruly that they trampled each other. Never mind that 80% of the people in that first flour massacre were found to have been shot. But this has been a pattern. So what does it matter if UNRWA or the Palestinian Police Authority are there to oversee the orderly distribution when they're being fired on by the Israeli military?
I agree with you on that point. I'm just saying I'm hoping saner heads prevail and are able. Well, what needs to happen is one five-minute phone call from genocide Joe Biden to Netanyahu would solve the whole issue and bring an end to the fighting in Gaza, Lebanon, and the Red Sea. All it would take is for genocide Joe to phone Netanyahu and say, okay, Bibi, you've had enough time, and from here on, you're on your own. No more flights of U.S. munitions, no more money. We're out of here. And that would be the end of it within days.
And of course, Biden and everybody is on the side of the angels when it comes to the welfare of the Gazans. And you mentioned these bogus airdrops, which have gone awry already, killing people on the ground. But this this idea of this dock, which I believe is the beginning of infrastructure for pipelines to rob the Gaza gas fields offshore. But that's just a guess on my part. I can't really base it on anything but a well-worn cynicism I've developed over the many years of watching this. Well, but even amongst the liberals, this watered down, and everyone will admit that at least, that the non-binding resolution put forward by the NDP, the minority partner to the government, was weaker than when it began, and it was not really super strong to begin with. But it still was too much for MPs like Anthony Housefather, a prominent liberal member who now is opining in the press that he doesn't know about his future as a liberal member now that this has gone forward. I'm not sure if he's just, you know, making, you know, soapboxing or whatever, but he seems to think that this is a grand betrayal of Canada's historic friendship with Israel, et cetera, et cetera.
Well, I'll tell you what Dimitri told me, Dimitri Lascaris, very famous Canadian lawyer, activist, and journalist who we helped organize a tour for recently about his visit to Russia concerning the war in Ukraine. And he told me what the issue should be for the NDP is that the NDP should make an ultimatum to the Liberal Party, Trudeau, and say, unless you are willing in practice to call for a ceasefire, to recognize the state of Palestine, and to do a number of other things, perhaps recalling our ambassador to Tel Aviv, the NDP will use this as a reason to end its supply and confidence relationship with the Trudeau government. That should be what the NDP is saying. And I agree 100% with Dimitri on that. This is a matter of life and death for tens of thousands, maybe hundreds of thousands of people. And it's a test of the character of the countries around the world. And the NDP should be prepared to bring down the Liberal government over it.
Well, it's a test for the populations of those countries around the world, too. And not only that, but justice for the tens of thousands already killed and maimed and made homeless and everything else. If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Ken Stone. Ken's an activist and author. He's been working for peace with the Syria Support Movement International and Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War for many years. His book, Defiant Syria, Dispatches from the Second International Tour of Peace to Syria, is a compilation of his dispatches from his 2016 visit there. Ken and the Hamilton Coalition, they have been in the fore for years and years, as I said in the introduction, and they're still there. And you mentioned since October, Ken, when you say that it's the people in the streets that have really made this resolution in the House happen. Well, I've been out here in Victoria every week, I think it was the 23rd week or 24th week last weekend. We get, you know, generally the same numbers, you know, 300 to 500 people coming out and march, you know, demonstrating, speechifying, and then marching through some of the downtown streets. What's it look like in Hamilton? Is it the same sort of setup?
Well, because we're near Toronto, it isn't. A lot of the time, people in Hamilton get it in their cars or on buses. Make car cavalcades and go to Toronto for demonstrations there. There's also demonstrations all around the city of Hamilton. They're in Brantford and St. Catharines and Niagara Falls, in Oakville and Burlington and so on. So there's a high level of activity, but we haven't had any big demonstrations in Hamilton for about a month or 6 weeks, but it could happen again tomorrow when... Depending on what the Israelis decide to do about Rafah. So people are still very upset. And, you know, things get organized here can be organized. It's one of those times, the rare times in history, when there's a lot of spontaneity from the people. And, for example, somebody said, let's have a weekend ago, let's have a banner drop over the expressway. And so a few of us went out there and we brought a banner and put it up on the expressway. And the honking and the flashing of lights and the V signs from the cars below was just astounding. So these things, everybody is still on edge and everybody's still willing to do something. And the support for Palestine is growing and growing.
Well, now, before we go on, because there's something I want to bring up, too. But now you mentioned Dimitri Lascaris. I've had Dimitri on the show a couple of weeks ago now, I guess, talking about his tour through the Middle East. He did a tour through Russia during the to bring attention to life in Russia during the Ukraine war because of, you know, basically the levels of propaganda that we receive here. Canadians can't possibly get a picture of what's going on if all they do is watch CBC or CTV or whatever it is, or the American majors. So he went there and was one handshake at a time was his the promotional tag for that. But Dimitri, you and I were talking off air, and you've got an announcement to make about Dimitri Lascaris and his current tour. He's still in the Middle East, but what's the next step, Ken?
Well, first of all, I'd like to express my appreciation to the alternate media, including Guerrilla Radio. If we didn't have it, there would be no way to get any information out because we are essentially blacked out of the media. There's a huge censorship going on. They don't interview us. They don't open our press releases. Or if they do, they don't call us back. It doesn't matter. The mainstream media seems to be a lost cause. So thanks for what you do, Chris, and thanks to Guerrilla Radio. And so I have a scoop for you. I just got off the phone with Dimitri Lascaris. He called from Cyprus. And the people on the phone, on the call, were people who organized his tour called the one you said, Citizen Diplomacy, One Handshake at a Time with Russia, putting ourselves in their shoes. And that was a very successful tour. And now Dimitri has announced that he would like to go on a tour of Canada once again, talking about the current situation in the Middle East, which is a British term, British imperial term for West Asia and North Africa. And his theme is going to be that the United States is backing Israel to the hilt because Israel is its last redoubt of hegemony in the Middle East. What he's saying is that the U.S. empire is declining. that it lost one of its main pillars in 1979 when the people of Iran rose up in a popular revolution and created the Islamic Republic. And it's losing Saudi Arabia because of various things we could go into. So the only power left that it can count on in West Asia to maintain U.S. hegemony over the region, which means that the U.S. gets the benefit of the oil resources of that region, which are the most important oil resources in the entire world, is Israel. And that's why they're backing this genocidal campaign. So I'm sure he's visited Jordan and Israel, and he's
been
to Lebanon, and he's not finished his tour yet. He's staying there till the end of April. So I'm assuming that he's going to be seeing other countries and talking to more people, and I think he'll be able to give us the big picture of West Asia. What is going on? Why is there so much resistance to the U.S. and Syria and Iraq? And, you know, why is there fighting along the Lebanese border? Why is Ansarallah blocking the Red Sea? All these issues will be explained by Dmitry in his lecture.
Well, and, you know, when you talk about the media, I've been following, because I follow some guys on YouTube that do very good analysis, and they're talking about rocket attacks coming out of Iraq right now against Israel on the Golan Heights. If you do a search on the main media of Iraq, you're not going to find anything about that at all. And these attacks are escalating, as well as Hezbollah launching attacks from the Lebanese side, and you're not going to see much about that either. It's the blackout is complete. Ken, before we move on, I want to cover another thing. You guys over there at the Hampton Coalition, you've got a campaign going to reinstate Henry Evans Tubrinke, or Ten Brinke, rather. Or correct my pronunciation, Ken, if you would.
Ten Brink.
Okay. what's that about?
That's about the Zionist lobby. Henry made a statement. He's a 40-plus year member of the Hamilton Mountain NDP Provincial Riding Association, and he was a delegate to the ONDP Provincial Council meeting on November 26, 2022. And that was during the discussion following the party leader, the interim party leader at that time, Peter Tappan's, about the apology that the party forced on Joel Hardin. After Joel Hardin, a sitting MPP from Ottawa, made some critical comments on a show by Peter Larson, who has an independent a YouTube channel, something like yours, Joel Hardin was forced to recant publicly about his criticisms of the state of Israel. And Henry got up at the provincial council meeting when this was reported, and he said the sentence. This is the sentence that Henry said. "I am disappointed that the NDP caved in to the Zionist lobby." That's what he said. And after the meeting, he was informed that an unnamed and still unnamed complainant had complained that he or she or they were made to feel uncomfortable about Henry's use of the term Zionist lobby. And as a result, Henry was the comment was turned over to the anti-harassment committee of the NDP, which determined that Henry had made an anti-Semitic remark. And as a result of that anti-Semitic remark, Henry was going to have to recant that statement, apologize to the provincial council, and undergo remedial training by an approved source. And so the approved source turned out to be CIJA, C-I-J-A, the Center for Israel and Jewish Affairs, which is the main organization of the Zionist lobby in Canada. And the fight has been going on for 16 months now. Henry has refused consistently, and they've threatened him consistently. And then when he refused to go to take re-education from CIJA, they suggested an outfit in the U.S. called Project Shema, which is another organization of the Zionist lobby in the States. So finally, we had a lawyer, Stephen Ellis, write a letter on behalf of Henry to the party. And the party lawyer responded last week by saying that Henry was not suspended, he is not expelled, and he doesn't have to make any apologies or take any training. So we thought that was a victory until we received another letter from a person called Kevin Beaulieu, who is the Ontario NDP provincial director, who said he still expected is the word, Henry to undergo remedial training. So we issued a media release last night. There's a provincial council meeting on Saturday. We're hoping that that we can get some answers on Saturday from the provincial council, though it is a Zoom meeting. So with a Zoom meeting, the host can just with a click of his or her or their mouse can shut down everybody's ability to speak. They can mute everyone. So we don't know if we're going to get justice, but so far Henry has not been suspended or expelled from the party.
Well, I guess that comes pretty much full circle. Before we go, though, Ken, I want to you guys at the Hamilton Coalition are also pitching in to host Eve Engler, and he's launching a book tour for his latest. I think it's his 13th book, co-written. I can't see the name of his co-author.
Owen Schalk.
Canada's Long Fight Against Democracy, an overview of Canadian-backed coups since 1950. You're kicking off March 28th, I see.
That's right. Eve will be on a Southern Ontario tour, and he's coming to Hamilton. This is the 12th book he's launched here in Hamilton. We have the Hamilton Artists, Inc., who is co-sponsoring it, and they are cordially giving us their gallery to host the event, and we hope people will come. We'll have refreshments for people who are Muslim who want to break their fast at 7:30. Admission is free, and all the information is on our website, HamiltonCoalitionToStopTheWar.ca, or our Facebook page, Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War.
Hamilton Coalition to Stop the War, all one word, .ca is the website. Ken Stone is the man. Ken, do you have any dates on the, I know you, this just came to you today, but on the Dimitri's tour?
Yes. Tentatively in Hamilton on May 15th, which is a Wednesday, and that'll be in the center of his Southern Ontario tour. And then we're not sure when exactly he'll be going east and west, but it'll be around the middle of May.
All right, so we'll look forward to that in May and maybe talk to Dimitri again before that kicks off. As always, Ken, thanks a lot. It's always great to speak with you from out there in the frozen central Canadian wasteland. We're counting flowers out here.
Oh.
And I want everybody else to stick around because John Helmer is going to join us after the break from way down under. And we're going to talk about his area of expertise, Russia, and other things too. Thanks again, Ken.
Anytime.
Half the world's trade passes by here. So much of it goes through Tel Aviv. Meanwhile, in the port of Gaza, no ships can arrive and not a boat can leave. While every day hundreds are dying beneath the rain of missiles fired from the air. Millions of starving Palestinians on the run, being slaughtered everywhere. No safe place in the Gaza Strip. No armies coming to defend. While all over the planet people are asking, when will this savage bombing end? How many more thousands of children can be killed while we stand by? How can we just live our lives while we watch the babies die? Shukran Jazilan to the who's the army standing for the conscience of us all. When they say no business as usual, while the bombs continue to fall. For a country that doesn't have an air force, they're painting banners that they use to board the ships to show their cause is right. The president says this terrorism must stop right away. To which the Houthis respond, yes, that's right, that's exactly what we're trying to say. Shukran Jazila to the Houthi army, standing for the conscience of us all.